It's now time for Cannabis Talk 101 with Blue, Joe Grande, and Mark and Craig Wasserman, the Pot Brothers at Law. We're the world's number one podcast for everything cannabis.
Welcome to Cannabis Talk 101. Sit back, take a hit, get lit, and get ready to get educated. Mark and Craig, the Pot Brothers at Law, Blue and Joe Grande. But today, you got me, little brother, the Wass. I'm out here holding it down while big brother Joe Grande and Blue, well, they're out social distancing somewhere. And we have a great podcast for you. Remember to catch Cannabis Talk 101 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you check out our IG pages for daily news, to learn the script, and learn much more about our personal lives. You can follow us at Cannabis Talk 101, at Pot Brothers at Law. That's Pot underscore Brothers underscore at underscore Law. At Wass Law is Big Brother. Actually, I'm at Wass Law. Big Brother's at Wass Law. Dog, one Christopher Wright is Blue, and at Joe Grande 52. And that's where you can follow us. And today we have some very special guests, very good friends of ours, two great super attorneys, Mr. Matt Cumin and Dave Bramfman. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Friends of the show, we've interviewed them over the years as we moved from FM radio to the iHeart podcast. I'll give you a little breakdown of each of these fabulous attorneys. Matt Cumin's been practicing since 1995, was thrust into the medical cannabis legal realm in 1996 when all the new laws were coming out for cannabis patients, Prop 215 in California, and his law practice was then forever changed as he started battling the state of California, the IRS, and many other corporations and businesses regarding cannabis patients' rights, representing those individuals and businesses trying to navigate the complexities of operating a cannabis business. And these days, he is concentrating on asset forfeiture and employee rights, particularly those who work in the legal cannabis industry. That's Mr. Matthew Cumin. Mr. Dave Bramfman, been practicing since 1978, focusing on intellectual property, entertainment law, including trademarks, domain names, copyrights, trade secrets, licensing, motion picture and television and music work. Mr. Bramfman has been at the forefront of the evolution of intellectual property rights and liabilities as it relates to the burgeoning cannabis industry since the beginning. Dave has also recently jumped into film producing, and he's got a short film that's making the round at film festivals. Maybe we'll talk about that. Gentlemen, again, welcome to the show. So let's start with Matt. You know, give us a little introduction. I know I did that, but give us a brief intro on what you're doing right now, you know, this past year or so in your law practice.
Well, thanks, Mark. Thanks for that introduction. And of course, always great to see David Bramfman with me, since we are often the brothers from another mother.
Speak a little closer to the mic.
I will, Mark. the cannabis space never ceases to amaze me. You know, it made it through the last 9 months of lockdown and COVID. Things are still happening. I'm sure David and both of you know what I'm talking about. Cannabis was considered an essential business. And so workers and companies could ship and do what they normally do. It's now becoming a big retail market and so forth.
Wait, I'm going to stop you right there, as I'm probably going to do throughout this segment when you guys say something that just sparks something in me. Essential business. Cannabis, as you just said, has been deemed an essential business, but yet it is still federally illegal. And the last we checked, this election period, 179 million people voted for cannabis in some way, shape, or form across the country. Let's start with you, Matt. Give us your thoughts on this, I don't even know what to call it, dichotomy, crazy, what is it?
No, it's the trend we saw beginning in 1996 with the passage of Prop 215. The increasing number of professionals like you and David and your brother coming in and being regular, normalized attorneys in a what speaks slowly, 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 but steadily becoming a regularized part of American life. Certainly, first and foremost here in California, though not without our own struggles here, 80% of our cities and counties are still really not interested in allowing cannabis production or sales. So, you know, obviously, you know, people think California was so enlightened out here, but we have quite a bit of resistance and stigma that still exists. So, you know, Mark, it's been for me 24 years of just watching, and it's been easy to predict, because all you have to say is, if you just agree that the cannabis sector is continuing to emerge, continuing to grow, continuing to expand, if everyone agrees with that, well, then you just know there's going to be it's going to happen. And that's just, so it doesn't surprise me. And it's, in fact, I went to speak at a conference in New York and New Jersey, I think it was 2 years ago, and we were helping to organize on the ground and just, you know, always providing our, you know, political action committee kind of policy background to local activists throughout the country, throughout the world. And I told you, I think I was in Uruguay and meeting with people from all around Latin America who are interested in, you know, this is just happening. You know, you don't have to really, you can't really be surprised, Mark. You know, this is just what's going on.
I'm definitely not surprised. And it's just frustrating just to you know, knowing what we know as attorneys. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, we can take inspiration though from Keith Stroup, one of the founders of Normal, who started on his quest a few short 5 decades ago in 1970.
Yeah.
When, I don't know, 13, 14, 15% of the US population thought that marijuana or cannabis, back then marijuana, should be legalized. It's a 50-year overnight sensation. But Keith is still at it and still optimistic. So
he has reason to be.
I put some good perspective on it. So Matt, getting back to where you're at these days in your law practice and how it relates to these cannabis businesses.
Well, you know, California law enforcement agencies are very excited now because they have not stopped going after cannabis and doing civil asset forfeiture. It basically is grabbing whatever cash they can out of the cars, particularly on a segment of the I-5 between Modesto and Fresno. They have a Facebook page for the police unit. They have their dogs profiled, their sniff dogs, which are, you know, those are all about to be thrown out of court for unreliability. I mean, but this is part of it's all over, but the fighting. This is like the Japanese troops who retreated in the Pacific Islands after World War II, who did not get word that the war was over, and were many reports, I think up until the early 1950s, they found their last Japanese soldier, you know, 7 or 8 years after the end of World War II in 1945. And that's what we have. We have very aggressive, very excited law enforcement who are going to continue to justify their existence, justify the tasks they do in their lives, and justify their sense of self-worth and value by continuing to just seize untold millions. I'm just intimately familiar in the last few months with, you know, $3 million in cash seizures, you know.
And so when a seizure like this happens, like you said, up on this stretch of the five, when a seizure like this happens, take us quickly through the course that somebody would do. They probably get arrested, or maybe they get let go. The money's gone. They call you. What happens?
Well, Mark, just to put a period at the end of the sentence, when the police stop you, you say, you know, why are you stopping me? And if the police keeps asking you, you say, am I being detained or am I free to go? And if they continue to ask you questions, you don't say a word, or in the parlance of the Pot Brothers, shut the fuck up, which yes. I've always wanted to say in your program.
I think, well, there you go.
So once, hopefully, if you've gotten there, you will, they will still search your vehicle. They will still take your suitcase, your bags, your radio frequency interference bags that people use. They will just take it all. And they will say, we'll send you a little letter telling you when you can come, come fight for your cash because we're taking it. And what happens then is they will give you a piece of paper. They may arrest you. They may not, depending on what you've got else you may have. If you have unlicensed, we use the word unlicensed now, cannabis in your car over an ounce, you will probably face some sort of infraction, misdemeanor, or depending on certain things, a felony. And you will be sad and your tears will start, but you will then call me and I will tell you some really good news.
What is that good news? Because let's say I'm the guy, and this actually happens quite often during the course of maybe a couple of weeks or a month. I get the call, something happened. We got to get Matt Cumin on the line. And the client calls, hey, they took $500,000 from me. What do we do?
Yeah. Well, you have to fight that, because if you just don't fight it, you're going against the trend in the law, which right now is courts and our legislatures and ourselves as an electorate, we're pretty much all looking at this going, they can't just take property from people like this. They can't just take cash just because it's cash, because they think it's related to drugs. I mean, it's really an affront and to everyone from every side of the political spectrum. For those of you who think that property rights are the most important thing, and that if you protect property rights, you protect other freedoms and liberties. To those of you who believe that no one should be stopped and questioned without a lot of due process. You know, we got rid of a king because the king could stop you and do whatever he wanted, and there was nothing between you and the king. Well, we've put law, we've put constitutional rights between ourselves and the king, and those have to be exercised. Paulina says that love is a muscle and you have to exercise. You have to touch your partner. You have to, you know, make an effort to really keep the love alive in your relationship. It's the same with the Constitution. If you love the Constitution and you love those principles, you have to exercise them all the time. And so we challenge, you want to challenge, you know, people think, oh, maybe I was doing something wrong. I shouldn't try to get my money. They're gonna do something to me if I go after my money. Listen, there's a new Supreme Court case that continues to nail the coffin shut. I wouldn't say it's the last nail, but it's a huge spike. And it basically says that the punishment has to fit the crime. And that if you're getting property seized in the course of what are essentially criminal arrests, even though they call it civil asset forfeiture, they're trying to take it out and to put it in the civil realm. But it's a crime for the government to take your property. And you should be fighting it as if it's a crime. And because of that, the Supreme Court has said, if someone is seized, property seized, and their crime was really a $10,000 or $2,000 fine or something like that, that's all you can take of that money. You can't take all the money.
And so if our client's caught with 25 pounds of cannabis and two unlicensed firearms, and they took $500,000, same scenario, still
it's,
go after.
They can't. They it's got they can take the guns. They can try you for having illegal guns. You may have to do some. You know, you have to go through the criminal process for that. But the money, they can't just take the money anymore unless it. The amount bears some relationship to the underlying criminal fine. The criminal fine, not the criminal time in jail. The fine, the dollar fine. This is the right wing and the left wing on the Supreme Court came together and said, you know, for all our different reasons, the government cannot keep taking people's money, no matter what they've done. And if they do, whatever they take has to fit the underlying criminal penalty that's violated.
Perfect. Money. So there you go. So if they take your money, call us and let us figure it out. There's ways to get of it back. There's ways to get all of it back. It's not hopeless. Before we
don't even use that word hopeless. It's very, we've don't even put that thought in people's mind. This is great news.
We've turned the corner. The Supreme Court has spoken. Some of the state courts now, we're going to be taking these cases up. It's going to get paved. The way will be paved for everyone to get their money back. And
well, there is hope.
It's there is more hope. Than hope. This is a deeper understanding the courts have. In the state of New Mexico, just passed the law completely eliminating civil forfeiture. So, you know, we're seeing a lot in California, made some changes in 2017. Unfortunately, the Narcotics Officers Association, which is a organization of public employees whose dues are generally paid for by their agency, so they can join together and figure out how to screw, you know, the cannabis community, is part of their agenda. Those folks have continued to insert their lobbyists into Sacramento out here in California, and made it so every time we try to get some changes, they manage to screw it up and throw a monkey wrench into it. Same with the police chiefs, the International Association of Police Chiefs. These are very powerful organizations. They have a lot of sway in the legislature. And every time we try to change, like try to change our assets forfeiture laws, they screwed that up royally. So
this is a big win. It's moving in the right direction. You heard it right there from Matthew Kuhman. And we are going to be back here with Mr. Dave Bramfman to talk about some intellectual property laws in cannabis right after this break. Welcome back to Cannabis Talk 101. Mark and Craig, the Pop Brothers at Law, Blue and Joe Grande. You got little brother Mark the Wass holding it down with our special guests, super attorneys Matthew Kuhman and Dave Bramfman. We're going to get into Dave. Great to have you back on the show, Dave. How are you doing? Looks like you're in Hawaii on the Zoom background.
Yeah, it's visualization. It's where I'd like to be.
So, it's where we'd all like to be. Where we all like to be. So we know you've been practicing since 78 in intellectual property. Give us a few highlights of what you've done over the course of your career.
Right. So the good news, bad news, is because I've been doing this since 79 or so, is I've gone from writing letters on a yellow legal pad with a pen to now doing everything digitally. And we've seen the whole transformation from computers to CD-ROMs to this thing called the internet to now the cloud. And that's one of the things that keeps my area of the law really fun and interesting, is as technology changes, we have to change, and it keeps forcing us out at the cutting edge of what's going on. And then you combine that with the cannabis industry, and you put intellectual property together with the ever-changing cannabis industry. I've been hitting it hard really only since 2010, so that's 10 or 11 years. But given that every year in the cannabis industry is like 7 in any other industry, it's my cannabis dog years theory of cannabis law, is it feels like 70 years. And you know, we've seen a lot of changes just in the last decade, and really in the last couple of years. So, you know, intellectual property law traditionally is, there's four basic tools: patents, copyrights, trademarks, and trade secrets. And then I subcategorize internet domain names, which is valuable internet real estate, under trademarks. So we've got four or five basic tools. And those tools have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. And now they're being applied to the cannabis industry, because like every industry, as investors come in, they want to know, if they invest in a new company, how do they know what they got? How do they know what, you know, company A has something better than company B that looked like they're both doing the same thing? You look at their intellectual property, and then you can collateralize the intellectual property to help protect the investment. So this has become really, really critical and really important. And the big thing that I'd say I've noticed in the last 12 to 18 months is, in the old days, so I'm gonna say up until around 2018, and correct me if either of you think I'm wrong.
All right.
You rarely saw a cannabis company sue another cannabis company, because particularly in California, everybody pretty much knew each other and kind of grew up together, or their parents grew up together, or escaped San Francisco and went up to Humboldt together. And it was a very kind of hold hands, let's all sing kumbaya and try to make this together, work together. There were exceptions to the rule, but I'm kind of talking in generalities. Well, that's all changed now as Silicon Valley comes in, Wall Street comes in, Canadian money comes in, European money comes in, and now you're starting to see cannabis companies sue other cannabis companies for all kinds of things, including deals gone bad, investments gone wrong, breach of contract, but also intellectual property, particularly trademark infringements. You know, a couple of years ago, we saw non-cannabis companies suing cannabis companies if a cannabis company adopted a parody trademark like Hashies instead of Hershey's.
And they Skittles was out there with a Z.
Skittles with a Z, or Ganja Joy instead of Almond Joy, you know, stuff like that. Or Star
Trek. Vader.
Yeah.
The Darth Vader stuff. And
so you had non-cannabis companies suing cannabis companies. I understood that. The non-cannabis company had a job it had to do. We could argue about the pros and cons of that all day. But now in the last year and a half, we're starting to see more and more cannabis companies suing other cannabis companies for trademark infringement. And what I've really noticed this year is a trend that we can identify as we look at the various court decisions, with lawsuits being filed, motions to dismiss being filed, motions for summary judgment, motions for preliminary injunctions, you know, all these legal machinations as the cases get ready for trial. And what we've learned that's really important for anybody who is growing, manufacturing, selling, or distributing a product in the cannabis industry is it's not enough just to have a couple of US trademark applications for your non-cannabis products. By the way, you can't get a federal trademark registration for cannabis, because cannabis is still on Schedule 1, but you can get trademark registrations for ancillary products like clothing and website information and hemp pre-rolls and stuff like that. And you can get California and state trademark registrations in states where cannabis is legal for cannabis, but you can't rely on just state trademark registrations for cannabis or just ancillary trademark registrations for non-cannabis products. You have to have some of both so that you have a comprehensive web of assets that you can show to a judge and say, look, judge, we've done everything we can under the law to get federal registrations where we can get them and state registrations where we can get them. And we have the right, even though we're based, for example, in California, we have the right to stop this infringer in Colorado or Michigan. So it takes a comprehensive, coordinated, dual strategy. That's the big takeaway in my field for 2020.
Wow, that's it's enormous. And fortunately, me and my brother have a very good IP attorney who you just heard him talking. And I actually,
I heard the guy's kind of a bit of a jerk.
That's the older brother.
Oh, not the lawyer.
No, he's the mean one. The older brother's the mean one. But I waive all confidentialities here as the client in this matter. But over my shoulder here, you see the hashtag STFU with the little TM, because we were able to get that hashtag STFU trademarked. But more importantly, we recently received some great news about another trademark.
Yes, you have.
Shut the fuck up.
Is a federally registered trademark for legal services.
Wow. You know, people are amazed when they see that TM behind shut the
now,
fuck up.
It should be the R now, Mark.
Oh, thank you for telling me that. I will change it. I actually had a note to change that. So we will change that. So shut the fuck up. A registered trademark for the Pop Brothers at Law. Now, please explain to everybody, you know, that word, it's most recently, I think things really changed.
So yeah, the two things have kind of happened in conjunction with each other to allow that to happen. You know, first of all, the first thing is that because you provide legal services, which are legal under federal law, there's no prohibition for getting a federal trademark registration for legal services that specialize, let's say, in providing advice and counsel to people who've been accused of marijuana crimes. There's nothing.
Fourth, you know, stop search right. and seizure lawyers, right?
So that was not an obstacle. The first obstacle we faced when we filed the trademark application was at the time we filed the trademark application for you for Shut the Fuck Up for Legal Services, was because it contained the word fuck in the trademark. The trademark application was rejected because under the old rules, a trademark that contained a scandalous or verboten nasty word was not allowed under federal trademark law. And so the trademark office rejected your trademark application. But then, thanks to a couple of really groundbreaking cases, the most relevant one is called the Brunetti case, where a fellow named Brunetti tried to get a clothing line, F-U-C-K-T, I think, or F-U-C-H-T, fucked, which phonetically spelled sounded like fucked, even though it wasn't F-U-C-K-E-D, it was, I think, F-U-C-H-T. I can look it up. But he took that case to the Supreme Court. I would have paid money to be in chambers when the nine Supremes were discussing whether or not fucked should be registered as a trademark.
Here, I'm all saying that.
I actually did listen in on the oral arguments for that case that were broadcast live. And it was totally fascinating to hear the Supreme. They never wanted to say the word publicly. You know, they danced around the edge. Anyway, Brunetti won his case.
No, you're up here.
Brunetti won his case, and the Supreme Court decided that it was not within the discretionary powers of the trademark office to determine what is or isn't scandalous or immoral. That it was too subjective of a standard. So we overcame that hurdle. Then the trademark office said, well, shut the fuck up is a common phrase. Lots of people say it. And our response was, that may be true, but so is you're fired, which is a federally registered trademark owned by the President of the United States. And we filed a legal brief with 20 or 30 examples of common phrases that have been federally registered for different goods and services. Plus, we put into evidence, Mark, the hundreds of thousands of users and viewers that you have on all your different social media platforms. And lo and behold, the trademark office would rescinded their refusal, and it's now a federally registered trademark.
That is awesome. I think we're moving on Shut the Fuck Up Friday too.
Right. Well, we already have Shut the Fuck Up Friday registered. We got that registered first.
Oh, that's
right.
That
was easier because it had the word Friday in there.
Right.
And they didn't consider that as common of a phrase as Shut the Fuck Up by itself. And that was also part of our legal argument.
Okay, so quick recap before we break is all of our intellectual property is covered. We have registered trademarks for hashtag STFU, Shut the Fuck Up Friday. And if I'm not mistaken, we have a copyright for the script.
Yeah, we have a copyright on the script.
And we have a copyright on the Am I Being Detained or Am I Free to Go poem, I believe, too. The slam poem?
Yes, I think that's right. I believe that's right.
So listen up out there. Everything that comes out of the mouths of the Pop Brothers at Law, if you plan on using it, talk to us first and let's make a deal, because Bramfman's going to come after you if you violate property rights.
Shut the fuck up, Mark.
Hey, and with that, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go through the Cannabis Talk 101 High Five with Matt Cumin and Dave Bramfman, super lawyers in the cannabis space. We'll be right back after this break.
Excellent.
Welcome back to Cannabis Talk 101 with Mark and Craig, the Pop Brothers at Law, Blue and Joe Grande. here today, Mark, and I'm with our special guests, Matt Kuhn and Dave Brampton. And before we continue, I want to give a very, very special shout out to Pit, Peanut, Jen, and Big Elvis out there in Vegas. That's our crew. They put our show together. They make us sound all nice and neat, and we couldn't do it without them. Thank you, guys. And now, actually, we're going to get to the high five in just a minute, but I got to go back, and we got to discuss something very important that's going on, not only in the cannabis business space, but just in business in general. And it's something that Matt Kuhn is near to dear to his heart. He's been fighting for it pretty much his entire legal career. Employees' rights and making sure employees are treated fairly. And amidst this pandemic and cannabis business is deemed essential, there's a lot of, bad things happening to some employees. Matt, what do you say?
You know, Mark, thanks for, again, that introduction about employees' rights. Actually, my legal career, I started in 95, and I represented employees then and have since. But actually, when I got out of college in 1980, I went to work in the South for labor unions, and we did union organizing, and I've been always interested in the rights of the people who actually do the work in this country and make things run, and shocked at how little regard has been taken to workers, and even less so over the last 50 years or 40 years after Reagan came into office. And we had a very different approach to unionization, workforce rights, and so forth. I will tell everyone who's listening that whether you're an employer or an employer, California has probably the nation's most stringent workplace protections. And the ones that I just want to mention briefly are, as a worker, you have rights to be paid by the hour. You have rights to be paid for your work, you know, very quickly after you maybe quit or after you are fired or terminated. You have rights to breaks every day. You have rights to a lunch break every day. And you have rights to overtime, which is, people don't realize, but in California, unlike most of the rest of the country, if you work over 8 hours in a day, up to 12 hours, you must be paid time and a half. So say you get $15 an hour and you do your 8 hours. Okay, you get 15 times eight, whatever that is, 120. But then for the next 4 hours, if you work any or all of those out, any or part of those 4 hours, you're going to get half of 15 is 750. So you get 22.50 an hour from hour eight to up to hour 12. And after hour 12, you're supposed to get double time. So if you're working on a rush job or a shipment or something, and this especially applies to agricultural workers in California in the cannabis space, because when the legislature passed and the voters passed, actually the voters passed Prop 64, one of the things that was in there was that agricultural workers who typically had a lower pay scale, and this is slowly changing, and we're almost there in the California regular ag wage laws, but they were treated differently than every other kind of worker, and they could be paid less. Well, the cannabis law that the voters passed in 2016 said all workers have to be in the cannabis space, whether they're on farms or not, have to be paid like every other worker, minimum wage, overtime pay, like that. And I have to say, sadly, that maybe not sadly, but just realistically, that since we know that about 50% of employers across the country don't pay their workers correctly, mainly by misclassifying them as independent contractors, that's the most popular one, not paying them overtime, not giving them their breaks, not making sure they can have a half hour of their meal break so they can get their sanity back from whatever insane job they're required to do. If you don't give everybody those basics, as an employer, you're going to face a lot of fines and a lot of trouble. And we know that the cannabis industry is pretty much mirroring now regular industry. So I would say probably half of all cannabis employers are incorrectly paying, not paying enough, misclassifying, all for the almighty dollar. Because the bottom line for employers when they don't pay their workers, the people who bring them their wealth, the people who make their wealth occur, and when they don't pay them correctly, they're stealing. It's actually a misdemeanor in California, though you'll never see a DA bring that charge. And they're doing it to save a buck, you know. And to me, this is disgusting, you know. And any workers who are listening, you know, people don't like to rock the boat when they have a decent job or a job at all, you know? So we don't see wage, what do we call wage and hour claims. Those come to us after a worker's been fired, typically, not always, but typically. And then they come and we talk about whether or not they were fired incorrectly or not, whether they were fired legally or not. But then the conversation turns into, well, you know, what about your pay? And nine times out of 10, those guys are like, well, you know, I never got paid overtime. My boss wanted me to do on this. He made me stay late, you know, and they don't get a paycheck that shows exactly their hours. And it's shoddy. It's really shoddy practices. For employers, my law firm is not representing you in litigation, but we're showing you how to avoid the traps. So we're showing employers, you know, if people are interested, they can call and I can point them to any number of attorneys they could go to besides myself who can help with compliance with the code, the labor code in California. It's strict and the penalties are severe. Last year we had a case with my associate. I was working with him and I wanted to, you know, help him pursue a case to help train him and understand the law. And we had a client had $186 they were supposed to have been paid that they weren't. And we litigated that case because the employer ignored every effort to collect $186. And in the end, the employer had to pay $13,500 because the laws allow private attorneys like you, me, David Brantman to go represent them. And if we win, which we generally do, they have to, the employer has to pay our attorney's fees.
All right, wait. So this employee didn't get paid $186. And I'm imagining the employee went to the boss. Hey, I didn't get my $186 bucks.
And the union and went to their union.
Now they went to the union and then went to you. And did you give a call or a letter, pay the guy $186 bucks? And, you know,
of course. Yeah, we went. Yeah, we said, hey.
And if the guy paid $186 bucks, you wouldn't have gotten anything. The client would have got the $186 bucks and that would have been it.
Yeah, it's insanity. The richest people seem to be the most penny pinching. You know, this guy owned a chain of supermarkets. He has millions of dollars, beautiful homes, anything he wants. And this poor guy who works in his supermarket, you know, $186 bucks.
Well, good for that guy, you know, but that's just goes to show the mentality. And that's why you need attorneys in all arenas.
Well, fairness to employees, they can go to the labor commission and file a complaint with the labor commission, and the government is required to go after the employer and handle it. But the labor commission is so overwhelmed. That's why the law gives the attorneys an incentive to say, okay, I'll help these workers. The state wants to protect workers and have workplace protections. Let's give the private bar an incentive, because otherwise, how do we get paid if we want to go out, you know, to do the work that the state says is important?
You know? Right. And that's important. And that's out there. And, you know, that's, as I was saying, it's important to know what kind of attorney you need. There's so many different aspects and areas of law, and the Pop Brothers at Law are fortunate enough to have this platform that we have met and an interview and know attorneys not only around the country but around the world. And that's why, you know, if you call 855-WAS-LAW, if you have some kind of matter, it doesn't have to be cannabis related, it doesn't have to be criminal related, it doesn't have to be in California, anywhere, we could potentially hook you up with the right attorney, no matter what state, county, country, city you're in, or whatever you need. And if we can't, we're going to be able to shoot you somewhere where you're going to be able to start moving in the right direction. And that can be hard to navigate in the law. We've got a lot of information here on this podcast. You might want to rewind it, rerun it, replay it, so you can learn all of this fabulous information. But now we are going to get to my favorite part of the show, the Cannabis Talk 101 High Five, brought to you today by Pop Brothers at Law CBD. That's right, Pop Brothers at Law CBD.com, where you can find some relief if you have pain, aches. Go check it out and do your research. If you've never used CBD for anything, there's creams, there's rubs, there's gels, there's hair products, there's everything. And we highly believe that CBD can quite frankly save the world. Pop Brothers at Law CBD.com. Check it out. It's the Cannabis Talk 101 High Five. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to ask the questions. Matt, you'll answer first. Dave, you'll answer second. Question number one, how old were you the first time you smoked and where did you get it from?
13 years old. I have no idea where that joint, it certainly wasn't from me.
It just appeared.
It appeared in a group of boys in 1971, I believe it was.
All right, there you have it. Dave Bramfin, same question.
I was about 15 or 16, and I got it from my next door neighbor who was a year older than me and a grade ahead of me. So, you know, back then in high school, a year and a grade was a big deal. And he was kind of the big kahuna. And he had it, and he got me and a couple other guys, and we sat in the basement in the dark, got high, and listened to an album by one of the first great, really precursors to the rappers, a guy named Lord Buckley. I don't know if either of you are familiar with Lord Buckley, but he was one of the first kind of jazz raconteur performance artists back in the 40s and the 50s. I'll send you some YouTube videos of his stuff. It was unbelievable.
Anyway. Nice. All right. So 13 and 15. Question number two of the Cannabis Talk 101 High Five. Matt, what is your favorite way to use cannabis?
Well, you know, I had asthma as a kid, and as an adult, I've not really had problems with it, but I like to keep my lungs clear. I'm still trying to figure it out. Still looking for the right formulation and method, because I don't really want to put anything in my lungs. I don't want to really use an edible that's going to keep me high. I have work to do. CBDs are, you know, I'm still trying to figure those out. So, you know, I don't know if I have a favorite.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask it another way. If you had no restrictions, medical or otherwise, to worry about, what would be your favorite way to use cannabis?
Yeah, probably the smoking is nice because the flavor is nice. The original, you know, OG method, you know.
There you go. Just a nice joint my way. That's probably my absolute favorite. All right, Mr. Bramfin, same question to you.
First and foremost, I'm a big fan of CBD. I play a lot of pickleball 4 or 5 times a week, and it really helps with the aches and pains, and also helps make sure that when I'm on the court playing pickleball, I'm thinking about pickleball and I'm not worrying about what else is going on in the world. And particularly, I like sublingual tinctures, which I see you're selling.
Yes.
The Pop Brother, the PB.
Where's my free sample of the?
Right.
I'm glad you said that because I wish I could get a free sample.
I've heard that excuse before.
We learned a thing or two from our IP attorney that we're not in a licensing deal. It's not a licensing deal. It's a partnership about this place. It's a nice lab out of Las Vegas. And I'll tell you more about it later, but we'll get you the discount code.
Now you at least you're on the right path.
And I'm going to guess the discount code might be shut the fuck up. Let me talk to the higher ups over there who handle that. All right, we get off topic here. We're back on the Cannabis Talk 101 High Five with attorneys Matthew Cumin and Dave Bramfin. We're going into question number three. Matt, the craziest place you ever used cannabis or smoked it?
Oh, I mean, I'm probably, you know, subject to, you know, I'm going to plead the fifth.
I'm not going to fault you. I get Mr. Bramfman.
Well, I won't say it's the craziest place, but maybe the coolest place I can think of off the top of my head.
Fair enough.
Is, the old Fillmore East in New York City.
There you go.
You know, with Derek and the Dominoes and Delaney Bonnie and Friends.
Who wasn't smoking weed at that time?
There you go. All right. Now we're getting some answers. All right. Question number four of the Cannabis Talk 101 High Five. Matt, what is your go-to munchies when you get high?
Well, you know, I'll tell you honestly.
Please.
Occasionally, I vaporize using a very nice vaporizing device where I take fresh flower and put it in the vaporizing device. And when I have the time and I'm able to, you know, give myself the room and I don't have anything pressing to do, I actually take what's the fried or the baked flour that has now been, you know,
yep.
And it has a nutty kind of crunchy flavor.
Yep.
And I chew on that and there's still cannabinoids in it. And it's delightful, both taste wise and for the, it gives me enough of that the cannabinoid to take away my aches and pains.
That's,
and
that's a great munchie.
It's wonderful.
That's a great munchie. It's good for you.
Incredible.
It's healthy. It's incredible. Helps you out. More cannabis. And it's all cannabis. What about you, Dave?
It's really, and even better, I'm still using, and I'm not a huge heavy user, but I still have jars of a crop that I grew 2 years ago. And I have nice little buds and
can you mail me some, please?
I don't believe that's legal under federal law.
It's legal under state law.
There's no state law governing postal service.
Oh, okay.
Well, an interstate carrier. So you're not allowed to ship cannabis on an interstate carrier.
Well, there you have it. We learned stuff even during the high five unwittingly. Dave, what is your go-to munchie after you?
My classic go-to munchie was for many years Sara Lee banana cake, but I've recently switched to ice cream.
All right. What flavor?
Lately, I've been kind of addicted to Breyers Snickers vanilla chocolate.
Wait, that doesn't have cannabis in it or CBD, does it?
No. It's my favorite munchie to go when.
Right. Oh. Okay. Now we got.
I misunderstood your question, Mark.
What you misunderstood? Hold on. Let me back up because this is the first time anyone in the. We actually just did our 150th episode segment on iHeartRadio just the other day, but before that. We have hundreds and hundreds that we did at FM radio. I've never had anyone misunderstand. What is your go-to munchie after you get high? Okay. Tell me what it is.
I said, I thought you said edible. And so I was.
It could be an edible.
No. My go-to munchie after I get high. Well, I've been on this keto diet and I don't have much of an appetite anymore. So, in the old days.
No munchies?
In the old days, it would have been anything in sight.
Okay. See, now you're sounding like Joe. Man, Joe, you know what? I don't. Question number five. I don't even know why I mentioned Joe's name. He loves attention. So I guess it was at the forefront. So there you go, Joe. I mentioned you. All right. Question number five of the Cannabis Talk 101 High Five. Matt, if you could smoke cannabis with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
I would have liked to have smoked with Richard Nixon. So,
that's great. I just did a show this morning and did a great quote revolving cannabis and Jews that Nixon said. So, but that's on another podcast.
Would all got Tricky Dick high with me to show him, that there was nothing really bad with it, and that he should have taken the Schaefer Commission's recommendation.
Yes.
And not put cannabis on Schedule 1.
Yep. That's I love that. I love that one. I agree with that. Mr. Bramfman.
All right. I got a tie for first place and they're pretty diametrically opposed. But they probably say more about the inner workings of my so-called mind than anything else. number one and 1A and 1B, Abraham Lincoln and Ringo.
Now, together or separately?
Well, I mean, together would be pretty cool.
All right. There you go. All right, guys. Thank you for participating. We have Matt Kuman, Dave Bramfman. Guys, Matt, let everyone know where they can reach you on social media and otherwise.
Sure. I have a page on the internet for my law firm, www.mattkumanlaw.com, MATT. KUMINLAW.com. And we have a Facebook page. that I think you're part of, Mark, and David maybe too, Higher Thinking, which is a fun place to learn about cannabis trends, share cultural and political and legal experiences. And we have a lot of very prominent and influential people in the cannabis space. It's a lot of fun to post and see what people say and get feedback. So that's a Higher Thinking on Facebook.
Yep, I'm a part of that. Mr. Bramfman, where can our...
couple of different places. I mean, email is always easy. Dave, D-A-V-E, at bmbr.com. That's my law firm, the initials of my law firm. Dave at Be Like Bob, M Mary, Be Like Bob, R Robert.com. I'm on Instagram at Bramfdog, B-R-A-N-F-D-O-G. My last name is Bramfman. Why my Instagram is Bramfdog, I'll leave that to your imagination. And then more traditionally, I'm at LinkedIn at David Bramfman.
Are you still doing Talking Trademarks Tuesdays?
I haven't been doing much of Talking Trademarks Tuesday lately because things have been happening so fast and frantic lately that frankly, I haven't had time to kind of prepare, but I'm thinking now that the new year is starting, I'm probably going to re-up it. Talking Trademarks Tuesday.
I think you should, and I'll jump on like great. I had in the past.
Cool.
And one more thing, I know you produced a short film that recently been around. Give me a quick 30-second film deal.
Okay, I'll try to do it in 30 seconds. It's called Leave 'Em Laughing, Leave 'Em apostrophe E-M Laughing. You can find it on Facebook and imdb.com. It's a short 15-minute film. It's based on a true story about a night of stand-up comedy in the theater that went desperately wrong, leading to tragic consequences. And it's a very engaging story about something that went odd in the theater in San Diego in 1987, based on a true story. And I co-executive produced it, and we've been winning a whole bunch of awards, best screenplay, best director.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. I knew there was something out there that you had going on.
Thank you.
Than in the legal realm, and we love promoting all that. Guys,
thanks guys
for jumping on and helping us educate everybody about things involving cannabis. It's so important, guys. Everybody, it's Cannabis Talk 101. Be sure to catch us. Remember, you can catch us at Cannabis Talk 101, www.cannabistalk101.com. Get all your information there. Remember this, no one else loves you. We do.
Right on.
Bye, Mark.
Thank you for listening to Cannabis Talk 101 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.